Miliband, welcome to you.
Morning to you, Andrew.
Good morning. If you lost the election in Scotland and you lost the election in England, how could you be a legitimate Prime Minister?
I think you're getting way ahead of yourself.
I'm looking at the polls, like everybody else.
I'm looking at what's happening in the country, and I think there's a huge choice at this election between whether you have a country run for the richest and most powerful, as it is under this government, or whether you have a country run for working people again. And I'm optimistic about Labour's message, because as I go around the country, I think Labour's message is being heard by people.
You're not suggesting well in Scotland.
We've got challenges in Scotland, but you know, I've got an old-fashioned view, Andrew, which is 12 days before an election, you allow people to vote, and then we'll see what the outcome is on May the 7th.
So you think you can win the election in Scotland?
I think we can. I think we can. Look,
really?
I think we can win the election across the country. You know, look, very few people have actually voted in this election.
Some people have voted.
Some people have voted, but very few people. Some people have voted by post. And look, the choice for the people of Scotland is, do they want the road to the referendum, which is what Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP wants, because they haven't ruled out another referendum in the next five years.
Haven't.
You know, they used to say it was once in a lifetime, once in a generation. That was before the referendum. And now they haven't ruled out for the
and
next 5 years. Or a road for a fairer economy with the Labour Party. That is the choice at this election.
And they will be coming to you saying, Ed Miliband, that is our price for supporting you. We want that referendum.
No, look, I want to be clear about this, Andrew. No coalitions, no tie-ins. You know,
about a supply and support a deal, one of those deals that would keep you going?
I've said no deals, honestly. I've been clear about
that. Of any kind?
Yeah, I'm not doing deals with the Scottish National Party. But, you know, I want a majority Labour government. And, you know, the way the House of Commons works, as you know...
So, absolutely,
is that we'll,
clearly, no support and supply deal of any kind?
I'm not interested in deals, no.
OK, that's very interesting. So what would happen is that they would then be looking at you from outside... They would be supporting you, perhaps, on the Queen's speech. You'd dare them. Would you agree with Roy Hatters? You put the Queen's speech down and say, come on, then, vote me down if you
dare.
Well,
I hate to say this again, but, you know, you are getting ahead of yourself.
I know, but it's very important in
the
election
campaign,
what everyone is talking about.
The way the House of Commons works is that, you know, we want to put our Queen's speech before the House of Commons and other parties will vote. But I want to just go to the substance of my disagreements with the SNP, because I disagree with them on independence, clearly. They want to break up the country. That is absolutely be a disaster for our country, and it's something I'm not going to let happen. But then there are other big disagreements on national defence, on the deficit, and also on a bigger philosophy question. You know, I think, and in a way the Tories and SNP now have something in common, which is that they want to, let me just make this point, they want to set one part of the country against another. The Tories say it's England versus Scotland,
but
the SNP say it's Scotland versus England. I've got a different view. I believe we need a Prime Minister who can unite the whole of our country, who can stand up for working people in every part of the United Kingdom. And that's the Prime Minister I believe I can be. Because I think
someone depending on their vote.
But the challenges we have in common across our country are bigger than what divides us. Now, the Conservative and Unionist Party used to believe that. But they're so desperate, Andrew.
All right,
they're
all
so
right,
desperate,
okay.
They're reduced to trying to set one part of the country against another.
So you've ruled out a coalition, you've ruled out confidence and supply, but if you depend upon their votes, you might, I don't know, you want to extend the A310 or whatever in the West Country, and you have to phone up Nicola Sturgeon saying, Nicola, as Prime Minister, may I do this? And she says, no, you have to put money into the A9 first.
For goodness sake, Andrew, I couldn't be clearer.
That's how it would be.
Let me put it plainly to you. If there's a Labour government, it'll be a Labour Queen's speech, it'll be a Labour budget. It's not going to be written by the SNP. I couldn't be clearer than that.
OK, but nonetheless, on issue after issue after issue, when you're actually governing, if you need the votes of the SNP, you have to go to the SNP and ask permission, which is why the Tories are putting you as a kind of puppet dangling from Nicola Sturgeon's fingers.
Well, I think it's interesting what the Tories are doing, because, you know, they've given up on the central issues of this campaign. They've given up on talking about the economy because they know they can't defend their record. They've given up on the health service because they can't defend their record and their extreme spending cuts they're planning. They've given up talking about immigration because they've broken their promises on immigration.
Right.
It's actually Labour that is on the issues of this election how we change our country
Party
so it works for working people again.
Party are agreed elsewhere. I just need to ask you some clear questions.
I thought it was an answer to the question.
Not entirely, if I may say so. I want to be absolutely clear. You're sitting in Downing Street, shall we say, and on the phone you see the words Nicola Sturgeon coming up. Do you press delete or do you press answer?
It's not happening, Andrew. It's not happening. Look, I just want to be clear about this. You know,
she will certainly phone you. Do you pick it up or not?
I go back to this point. The way the House of Commons works is that parties will decide how they vote on the proposals we put forward. But as I say, I'm working for a majority Labour government, and I do think we owe the British people, and I would say this to the Conservative Party too, a debate about the issues. Now, I know they feel they're losing the argument on the issues, but let's debate the issues. Let's debate the issues like housing and the health service and all of those things that people at home are thinking, I'm still making up my mind about how to vote in this election.
The reason I'm banging on about the SNP is that
there is evidence... I didn't quite accuse you of that.
Well, you will do shortly, I'm sure. Is that it seems to be cutting through in the English heartlands, and it's going to become a big... It is already a big, big issue in this general election campaign, however much you wish it wasn't.
You know, that's not what I'm picking up. You know what I'm picking up is that people are asking, are you going to sort out the living standards crisis that I face? People are saying, for 5 years, wages have fallen behind bills. Are you going to do something about that? People are saying, I'm worried about the prospects for my son and daughter. Are you going to help that? People are worried about the health service. So I think those are the big issues that people are asking me about.
One final go on this. Nick Clegg, not Paddy Ash, Nick Clegg says that an SNP Labour government would be regarded by many people as illegitimate. And Theresa May has used similar words, that there is a crisis of authority for a Prime Minister who depends upon nationalist votes to get measures through the House of Commons.
I said there's not going to be a coalition with the SNP.
But so you may well have to depend upon their votes.
The truth is about Nick Clegg is that, look, he's lost. He's not got anything to say either about the issues. Look, there's one party leader who's actually talking about the issues in this campaign, who's actually talking about what's happening in people's lives. And I think that actually the British people will be looking at this and scratching their heads about a Conservative Party that started the election saying they want an election about leadership and abandoned that, then said they want an election about the economy and abandoned that, then said they wanted to talk about health and abandoned that too. So
just
I think
to bang
it's telling you a lot about the election campaign. Now, I want to say Andrew, which is I don't think we should predetermine the election outcome. I mean, Boris Johnson appears to have decided the election outcome in
lots
his election
have,
with you. He seems to be saying there will be a Labour government. I think this election is still going to be a close and a hard-fought election, and I'm going to fight it to the finish.
Let's just finally bang the nail into the piece of wood, finally. A confidence and supply deal with
I've
the SNP
clear
is
we're not
ruled
in those deals. No.
Not going to happen. OK, well, let's move on to some other issues. People say that the first thing that you will do if you become Prime Minister is start to borrow again, because that is your natural instinct. You are a taxing and borrowing politician. Always have been, always will be.
They're wrong.
Well, you won't apologise for the excessive borrowing that you did when times were good in the last Labour government. You have never gone back and said, do you know what, times were good, we should have been paying down a bit more of the deficit.
Let me set out what we're going to do, because you made a serious point about what's going to happen under Labour. We're going to cut the deficit every year. That's going to be the first line of Labour's first budget.
We're going to balance
the books and run a surplus on the current budget, and we're going to have the net debt falling. And let me just make
this
point to you.
I
just want to make this point to you, then come back. Look, it's this point about spending commitments. Because I think the test of a party is when you publish your manifesto and you say what you're going to do, is it costed and paid for? Now, the Conservative Party have sprayed around commitments on health and tax cuts and all of that without a clue about where it's coming from. Every penny of what Labour has set out, we're saying where the money is coming from. And I think that is such an important test.
I am absolutely serious about this commitment
to fiscal responsibility, Andrew. I couldn't be clearer about it. We are going to be fiscally responsible. We are going to get the deficit down. And I'm going to be cutting spending outside key protected areas.
So
and no Labour leader has gone into an election saying that.
Fewer police, fewer traffic wardens,
Let me say that very clearly. Look, health and education are protected, and international development, but outside those areas, we are going to have to make reductions in spending.
So there'll be fewer police, you're going to hit social care?
Well, let me come to those points. On policing, we've shown how we can make £800 million of savings to protect neighbourhood policing. That's an important commitment. On social care...
But you're going to cut the police budget.
The Home Office budgets are going to have to fall, yes. Mm. I'm clear about that. Let me come to social care. Because, look, we are trying to get to an integrated service, and we've set out plans through a mansion tax on the most expensive homes above £2 million, clamping down on tax avoidance by the hedge funds and money from the tobacco companies for a whole series of things, more doctors, nurses, midwives, and also care workers. This is the point about social care. 5,000 new care workers, a new arm of the NHS. And that is going to help ensure that elderly people don't get stuck in hospital.
So it doesn't sound very draconian to me, because you're already talking about more jobs and more spending.
We're not guaranteeing, for example, local government budgets.
Okay.
So, for example, in local government, we've set out how we can make £500 million of back office savings.
Okay.
I think I'm the first Labour leader. You'll know this better than me.
Let me come to the crucial point, if I may, which is that you have distinguished between current spending and capital spending. So you have allowed yourself leeway to spend to borrow and spend billions of pounds on new infrastructure projects, new roads, new hospitals, new schools, new railway systems, and so forth.
No, that's wrong, Andrew. Let me explain why.
Chris Leslie says that you have allowed.
No, let me explain.
You've distinguished between those two things.
We've got no commitments to additional borrowing in either the capital budget or the current budget, and we're actually going to run a surplus on the current budget and have the debt falling.
So why does the Institute of Fiscal Studies say that you're going to be borrowing another £9 billion?
Well,
beyond £90 billion by a factor of 10. £90 billion.
Well, look, I don't agree with the IFS's analysis, and I'll tell you why. Because we're going to have a surplus on the current budget. Their plans, that their analysis just says we're going to balance the current budget. But let me make a bigger point. I want to make a bigger point because there's three positions in British politics today. Well, there are those who say no cuts. I'm not saying that, as I've shown in this interview. There are people who want to double the cuts next year, the Conservatives and UKIP. Mine is a sensible and balanced plan, including fair taxes.
Middle of the road plan.
One way of describing it.
Can I come back to the other big, big question about the public spending cuts and so forth, which is that you have a party to your left, the SNP, and you have a party to your right, the Conservative Party, but inside your party you have a lot of MPs, a lot of them are going to be Unison sponsored, who are going to be very hostile to cuts in public services of any kind and are going to challenge you again and again and again, just as happened during the 1970s. Aren't you going to be facing a revolt from inside the Labour Party too?
Well, I think the difference is with me and David Cameron is I lead my party and I decide what happens in my party. And I've set out very, very clearly our plan and we're going to stick to our plan, Andrew.
Why did you never, ever apologise for the overspending in the last Labour government? Did you believe seriously at the time that you had abolished boom and bust?
Well, let me take two parts of that question, because I think there are two parts to that question.
There are.
We got it wrong on bank regulation. We apologised for that.
But that's not what I'm asking about. And rightly so.
No, because you asked about what happened to the economic cycle. We've apologised for bank regulation, which caused the economic crisis. But if you're asking me, do I regret spending on health, and education, and sure start centres.
Regret borrowing in the good times?
I regret the financial crisis. No, Andrew.
You think the financial crisis got nothing to do with borrowing?
What I'm saying is the deficit didn't cause the financial crisis. The financial crisis caused the deficit. Mm. That's why President Obama is dealing with the deficit too. It wasn't because Labour invested in schools and hospitals in the UK. And look, the question for now is getting that deficit down and balancing the books. That's what we're going to do.
Now, is it not the case that you are in effect saying you did borrow a lot in the last time? That has been your instinct. And you're saying to the British people, here's the credit card, I'd like the PIN number back.
No.
That's not what you're saying.
No.
Because you're not going to borrow more. Let's turn to your rental policies, which you did. Virtually every single economist says it may be a nice idea, maybe a kind idea to people renting in private accommodation, but it just doesn't work. Rent controls are the single thing that all economists agree never works.
This is the right policy. There are 11 million people...
Even if it doesn't work?
Let me explain. There are 11 million people in generation rent. They've been forgotten. They've been forgotten by this government, and they've been actually forgotten in the past as well. And we're not going to do that. Right? That's why we're going to introduce three-year tenancies. And in the 3 years, it will mean that the rents can't go up by more than inflation, because you know what,
won't
Andrew?
What happens? Let simply, private landlords, before you get there, will jack up rents in a big way before this happens to protect themselves.
I don't buy that. And let me
Why not? Let
me explain the point of this policy. You get security of home ownership. I have security of home ownership. If it's not good enough for me, it's not good enough for the British people. And there's a bigger argument here about the election. Does our country just work for the richest and most powerful, or does it work for working people again? Now, I make no apologies for being somebody who's going to say, we're going to help those people who are renting. We're not going to forget those people who are renting.
I completely understand the principle. My question is, will this policy actually work?
Yes.
Because most economists say it won't.
Well,
why don't you know that it's going to work?
Think
it won't.
Look at what happened in Ireland. In 2004, they introduced this system, and it has worked. And you know what? There are more people renting in the private sector in Ireland than there were 11 years ago. That shows the policy can work. And you know,
Professor Lindbergh, eminent Swedish economist, says this.
I was reading his works last night.
Indeed,
I can assure you.
I'm sure you were. The most effective way of destroying a city, apart from aerial bombardment.
I think that's a little bit over the top. Look, let me just say to you, this will work. And you know what? Britain is almost unique in the world in having these insecure one-year tenancies. Now, I think this is worse for tenants and worse for landlords as well, because this insecure system where people are churning around, where landlords can jack up rent at a moment's notice, that isn't actually great for landlords either.
We had rent controls in the 1970s, and they went because they weren't working.
But this is a different proposal, because at the beginning of the tenancy, the rent is determined by the landlord and the tenant. It's within the 3 years that there's a period of stability. Now, you would expect it, I would expect it, Yeah, we've got families who don't know from one day to the next whether they're going to be kicked out of their home or their rents are going to be jacked up by 10%. So, that is not good enough for the Britain that I plan to
lead. So when I say, but the problem is that people will jack up the rents before this policy comes into effect, and you shake your head, why do you shake your head? Why won't they?
That's not been the logical thing to because that's not been the experience elsewhere. That's not been the experience in Ireland. Look, there's a bigger argument here. Whenever change is proposed, there are always people, special interests, Boris Johnson, who say we can't have that change because they want to defend the status quo. But this country needs to change so it works for working people again, and that's what I want to do.
You can talk.